Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, and I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. We're podcasting on-site at Ibis Images Studios. Attention chefs and GMs and bar managers, are you looking for a fantastic food photographer to capture your delicious dishes, cool cocktails, and your property's amazing architecture? Well, get with John Hernandez. He is awesome. Check him out at ibisimages.com. Well, it's election season at the ACF. And today we are going to interview the current sitting ACF president, national president, that is, Chef Kimberly Brock Brown. Let's dig in. But first, attention chefs and food buyers. Are you looking to improve your proteins program with quality and service by the best in the beef business? Reach out to Peninsula Food Service with 25 butchers on staff. Their services will dazzle you and impress your dining guests. Peninsula is the largest Creekstone Farm distributor in the Southeast United States. Let the gang at Peninsula Food Service cut your beef burdens away and ask about their dry-aged program. Look them up at peninsulafood.com. All right. Chef Jeffrey Schlissel, how the hell are you?
I'm fantastic, man.
All right. What have you been cooking?
Ironically, with the person on the phone, I've been cooking pastries and baking a lot.
That's okay.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, well, tell me about it.
Well, I figured I might as well look at some of the desserts that barbecue has and how I can twist my mindset on what desserts look like and can be. So I took a classic of carrot cake and I actually smoked the carrots in a cold smoke. And then I took some golden raisins and dunked them and drowned them in bourbon. Mm. Then I smoked those, and then I made the carrot cake. And then for this, the icing, I used a snickerdoodle cream cheese ice cream.
Oh, stop it. So wait. The actual icing on the cake is this,
literally.
Oh, wow. Wow, man.
And then I used, instead of using like a caramel or something.
Is that what's in that?
No, that's the other thing I cooked that I brought today.
Okay. Because I see something that's in tinfoil there. And I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's another yummy. So let me finish on the carrot cake. Instead of using the normal stuff you would have, the icing in the middle, I actually made candied pecans. And then crunched those up and then folded them into dulce de leche.
Stop.
So I had to show some Miami feel to it.
Yeah, sure.
But what's in that tinfoil over yonder is a bourbon chocolate pecan pie.
You son of a... Wow.
Yeah.
How come we haven't broken that out yet?
Because we had banana bread earlier.
But what does that have to do with anything?
Nothing. We can have maybe John run over and...
I feel bad for John today.
We can ask Smokey.
All right, listen.
But Smokey has no thumbs.
It's funny. True story. All right, so listen. First of all, both of those sound delicious. Obviously, you scrimped out on the first option there. You brought this one, so I'm excited to give it a try. Let's get Chef Kimberly on the show. Welcome, Chef Kimberly. You are on the line. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you all doing today?
Bourbon's flowing, so we're doing much better now.
Yeah, I think that intro just gave me 5 pounds I didn't need to have. I mean, oh my god! But it was Pie Day a couple of days ago, so pies are good.
Yeah,
well, that's what it's all about. And you know what? It's a happy 5 pounds. It's not like an unhappy 5 pounds, right? All right, so
no, Chef, I don't need any more poundage,
Chef Kimberly. So obviously, you're the current sitting ACF national president. And, you know, we have a lot of, we have a whole just wide spectrum of listeners to the show. Everybody from within the industry, foodies, you know, the whole gamut. Why don't you go ahead and give a brief description of, you know, kind of who you are, your history and how you wound up, you know, in being the president. Go ahead. Yeah. Give it about 2 minutes. Okay.
Great. So Kimberly Brock Brown, I am born and raised in Chicago. I live in Charleston, South Carolina. And it's funny, I was having this conversation that I have lived in the South Carolina in Charleston area now longer than I lived growing up in Chicago. But even though that is a fact, I'm still considered a foreigner in South Carolina. So you know, either you're from here with that accent or you're not. from here, come whatever. So anyway, I've lived in the South because I don't want to be cold with the snow no more. As I've gotten older, you know, snow's a four-letter word, so I can't do that. All my siblings are now South. My mother is in the South now. So they're all in Texas, as a matter of fact. So my culinary journey began as an apprentice in Dallas, and I have moved around between Hilton Head, South Carolina, Atlanta, Georgia, Asheville, North Carolina, to finally calling Charleston my home for the last 24 years. Baking and pastry has been my thing for a long time. I realized in my apprenticeship program that as much as I love making soups and sauces when I was in the saucier area, that I didn't see an executive chef coming out of the saucier. Executive chefs, in my history, my knowledge came out of banquet kitchens or restaurants. And so when I had the opportunity and learned that the pastry chef that I was going to be working with was the one who was grooming and training future pastry chefs for the hotel, I said, hey, let me get this pastry chef thing and figure this all out. And he was training and teaching people. So I just stuck right there and the rest is history.
Well, that's pretty awesome. So let me ask you this then, with Jeffrey's, Chef Jeffrey's, you know, description, how did that sit with you? I mean, I know we're all going to gain, you know.
I am not mad at him. I mean, I love a good carrot cake. I know a lot of people that I saw that he doesn't like carrot cake, but I ain't mad at him for playing around with it.
You know, it's good that somebody's not mad at him because I got to tell you, I'm not mad at him. Yeah, that's really good. All right, Chef, we're going to jump into some questions. Let's go ahead and start with number one, which is, all right, so for aspiring chefs and chefs that are closer to retirement, what does the ACF offer them?
So from my experience as, I started with ACF when I was 19 years old as the apprentice. And so for me, it offered an opportunity to get education in the field that I was very interested in, that, you know, I had learned about being a chef or learned what a chef was, even though we used to go out to eat all the time. It was great, you know, great food in Chicago, but I never associated that with a career path. You know, and as I was searching in my high school years for it, it was never articulated to me what a chef was, because it just wasn't in the vernacular at that point in time, all those years ago. And so being a chef to me in ACF is offering the younger people and all of our students are not necessarily all that young. Some of them are seasoned at this point in time, second career choices, following what their passion, what their art is. It's an opportunity to learn the craft, learn it well, the insides and outsides of this business. It is a business and it's an industry that's you know, related very closely to healthcare. As people are more and more older and wiser and want that fountain of youth, and they know that it's related to food. And so it's a teachable, doable industry that's essential, that's worldwide. And so I think it offers a lot to those who want a career, but you definitely got to have a passion for it because it could be brutal, it could be unforgiving. And for those who are more seasoned, close to retirement, I think just like somebody had to teach the younger ones, I think it's a great opportunity to impart that knowledge and experience that you've gained over the years to other people, to keep the culinary journey going for other people, to pass on those secrets, those tips that you've learned, to keep you smooth out some of those rough places that other kids and students don't have to hit those divots and pivots like you had to do.
Excellent. And when you find any information about the Fountain of Youth, you contact me.
Both of us, please.
I thought it was in Florida. I don't know.
That's what you hear. But you know what?
Down here.
It doesn't seem that way. All right. What role could the ACF play in partnering with charities that offer assistance to mental health and substance abuse concerns in the food industry? You know that, you know, we have a lot of challenges when it comes to drugs, alcohol, you know, just burnout and the whole in that whole genre there. How do you see that?
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Well, I agree that our industry is plagued with that, but also coming to the forefront has been a lot more because of that need. I think the need has been or is being brought to the fore. More and more people are aware that there is help available, and most of it's free. You know, and most people, I think, have gotten away from the stigma that might be attached with asking for help. We've partnered and have it on our webpage, you know, information about Ben's friends who we've had, and they've done webinars. They've been in our conferences and conventions before. Child, I mean, we have a whole wellness page dedicated to it. The dialing 988 for, you know, suicide prevention and other things. I mean, it's a whole conglomerate of people and entities, nonprofits, organizations that are there to help, but glad that they are there to help. And so I think that as more and more people, as they become aware of it, you know, it's that work-life balance and mental health days. It's amazing. You know, I can remember having to lock up vanilla extract back in the day because we had a PM baker who discovered vanilla and Coke way before it was discovered to be vanilla and Coke. And so, you know, the problem is real. It's there, and there is more help available. So I'm glad we have advertised it. We've partnered with different organizations and continue to do so.
Well, it's a special, that topic is special to me. So anything that, you know, the Walk and Talk Media can do to help promote that, let us know, because we'd love to be involved, you know, on a deeper level.
I appreciate that.
Of course.
Duly noted.
All right. Are there steps taken by the ACF to increase engagement with different cultures in the culinary world? Are they effective? What is the best way for the ACF to position itself on that front?
Well, you know, one of our new partners, Turkish Taste, I was at the consulate's home in Los Angeles a few months back. They were welcoming ACF and some of our other members were there as well, and to expand that relationship with them and the products that they bring over. I mean, if you remember, Nathan, Turkish Taste had a whole row, basically, of some of the items that they are bringing and doing and are comfortable with. Even on our webinars, which, of course, are worldwide, we have people who are tuning in from places across the globe, be it Vietnam, Ireland. We are a global entity. We have members everywhere. You know, even our own chapters between the Philippines, you know, Dominican Republic. We are a global entity. And so our webinars are helping to bridge the gap of when we're not there in person, or when those people who are in those places can't come to where our national convention are or our local chapter meetings. So it's a small world as far as we can reach out and touch people through our webinars and online presence. It just makes it a little bit smaller that way. So we are there. We can always do better and we can always do more. So, you know, I'm open. I think ACF is open too, as far as what else we could do to reach that. And we've had memberships that we've had to turn down from other countries because we just can't, we don't see the benefit of taking that money and offering them money in return. They can't get what we have. One thing, there'd be a language barrier. I mean, we do good. It's at least an expense to translate now from English to Spanish. And we have started that, but it's an expense. So how do you translate into Arabic or Japanese and Chinese? And to what benefit would that be for both parties? So it's an ongoing process.
Yeah. And that's it's important because, you know, a lot of those folks, you know, they end up here, living here. And in many cases, the jobs that they're going to find are, you know, in hospitality.
In culinary.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I agree.
All right.
And, I mean, you know, we are everywhere and the, you know, everything can't be for everybody. But how you can bridge that gap, I think it depends on, you know, that person and the person that they're working with and for to help with that.
Over the past two decades, we've seen a remarkable rise in the number of female chefs in the food industry. What's the best way for the ACF to foster an inclusive atmosphere in the food industry as a whole? And I know this for my being a distributor for the last in distribution for the last 25 years. I mean, I've seen that spectrum just shoot up. I mean, it used to be so taboo, and it just simply isn't now. What are your feelings there?
Well, I've seen numbers, and on average, I think 25% of the workforce for executive chefs are women. And I also know that from my own experience being an adjunct four different times over the last 15 years, that the majority of my classes have been women. So if I had 25 students in my class, I'd say 18 were women. But we lose the women somewhere in between graduation and getting to that management spot. And so to me, it tells me that there's a work-life balance issue because, like it or not, women are still the caretakers or still have, you know, the primary responsibility of taking care of the children. And so if you can't accommodate a female in the industry for what that life situation is for her, that's a problem. But also, there's still a lot of sexism going around. I hear stories all the time, and, you know, we could sit there, we could trade off stories about this happened, he said shit, she said that, whatever, and it just goes back and forth. There's still a lot of good old boy stuff happening. But women have found a voice, otherwise those numbers wouldn't be rising, and are fighting back to taking it. And you know, the opportunity to take it is also has also increased as more and more people are realizing it, you know, that women are here and we can do more than just, you know, baking and pastry and gum.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as of right now, I feel like the opportunities are there and, you know, you're dealing with obviously you're correct. I think you're correct in saying that, you know, there are still traditional roles being played out and, you know, it doesn't matter where one sits on that idea, but the realities are such. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there probably needs to be, you know, some more coming to the middle on that topic, but definitely have come a long way in my estimation.
Yeah. I mean, it's not perfect. It's still a way to go. I was at a conference, Women in Culinary, and 30 badass women who are running stadiums, arenas, school universities, you know, all walks of life and executive chef level. And, you know, they hear their stories and their trials, you know, and like, you know, people will walk in, distributors will walk in, people walk in, where's the chef? Is he here yet? And they're talking to the chef, you know, because they're not recognizing that the chef is this woman sitting right there in front of them, you know? And so you get that. I mean, we can all trade those stories for the most part.
Hey, look,
you
know, I don't want any trouble here. Okay. I'm done. I don't want any trouble. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it was you.
Right.
But yeah, so you know, the perception about who a chef is needs to change. You know, it's still the perception that a chef can't be the woman. It's got to be the guy.
With so many culinary programs, either closed or in the process of closing. How can educators help to encourage student participation and involvement within the ACF?
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
So, you know, a lot of that has to go, I would think, on the local chapter. If there is a local chapter, then that local chapter really needs to be engaged with that school. I have visited a few schools over the past year, and they're ACF accredited schools. They have the ACF logo on their jackets, but the students did not know what that meant to them. You know, and as somebody who, you know, as I've always said, I felt like I had three strikes against me being a person of color, being female, and then deciding to go pastry. That, you know, whatever advantage I could get, I was going to take it to help further my career. And so just to have them open up and know that there's online learning that they can do, that there's a whole network of the chefs that they can engage with and learn of. I always subscribe to the notion it's who you know gets you in the door, not what you know. What you know will keep you there. And so if you can network with other chefs and they know who you are and what you do, If you are in competition, and we just left our first ever qualifier in Kansas City over the weekend. And I told those students there that, you know, you competing out of all the other schools that have the opportunity to compete, and you came and you did it, you showed out. And these judges, seasoned chefs, know that. You know, I've seen many people who have competed, who've gotten that great job, that great interview, got a foot in the door, were highly recommended, because we know as competitors that, you know, it's a different mindset. It sets you on a different level. How you cook and how you put food on the plate when you compete. And so I think the competition part, but a lot of that, I just really do believe that you have to, those local chapters have to engage with those schools and the communities and get to those teachers who may be apathetic or who may not even know themselves what all ACF does, that it's the person in the corner office, not necessarily the chef director who's running the program or who signed up because it's mandated that they become accredited. So it's an education, I think, of the whole thing.
So then what is actually... Is there a best course of action or plan of action for promoting education within the ACF? You know, because what you just outlined there kind of, you know, it bled into the next question. You know, how do you actually, you know, put it into works?
So we can advertise, and we do. I mean, our webinars and what we have for our online learning is key. I mean, even if you're certified, you still have to take education and get continuing education hours. So the education process doesn't stop because you graduated out of school. And if you're a certified chef, you definitely have to do something, keep something going to keep that certification, even if it's just those three mandated courses. So I think putting the word out about, and a lot of things, you know, because COVID, going online is the way to go. Because you can't be everywhere to everybody, even for like the summits that we have, the six that we have planned coming up and starting in this July, the two that we did last year when we kicked it all off. I mean, there's education components. I mean, I know before when there was no ACF in my area, when I lived in Hilton Head at the time, I depended upon Albert Rooster. They used to have those $1,000 classes, you know, that you, oh, please, can I go beg your FMB director to send you, you know, to take, you know, a 5-day marzipan class or whatever the specialty class was. And that was all you had to, that was all you offered. That was all that you could find to offer education, continuing education, you know, as a pastry person. So to be able to go online, I think nowadays and get a class or, you know, Google University, YouTube University, even that. I mean, our stuff is online. And I think that's a great way to bridge that gap or to add to your repertoire what you need to know.
Chef, on the topic of the courses you're doing online, are these profitable? Are we charging for these, you know, for the online courses?
They are very profitable. We don't charge for the webinars, but the webinars add to the library of things that we are doing. So when we get to making money and profits off of it, yeah, we are definitely. It also provides a great opportunity for content to reach out to other people. And then we also can capture their contact information because you have to sign on and sign in. And it puts our ACF programs at top of mind for our subject matter experts. So we have other people in other entities, other areas reaching out to us to become part of our online platforms. Plus, there also are resources on our YouTube and on our learning channel that our sponsors or potential sponsors are looking at because they know that they can reach certain people and they get the analytics for that. And so it has been very profitable, both sides of it. Definitely. It's a moneymaker.
Should the national board receive benefits without bringing in paid sponsorships?
Okay. So when you say benefits, you mean what exactly?
Getting payment for flights, national convention.
No. I mean, it should not cost out of my household to be doing business for ACF, but it should not also be something that a board member takes advantage of and cost. You know, there's no, the ROI has got to be there, you know? So if you're just out running around doing stuff, then no. But I believe that a great asset would be for the board members to bring members, bring sponsors, start that networking, start that connection with other entities that we can help and bring more influence into ACF. So I believe that, yeah, to a point, things should be paid for. Because when you have to be somewhere and you mandate it, it shouldn't necessarily have to come out of my household budget that I have to be there. Or, but on the other hand, for somebody just to be sitting there and not contributing anything to the bottom line of ACF, that's not right either.
This is a two-part question. What inspired you originally to run for national president, and what is your inspiration for running again?
To run for president. So as I was sitting as Southeast vice president, and I know all the talks that I've given when I've mentioned other people, that if you see an opportunity, you should take the opportunity and then you figure it out later, right? If you can't figure it out at all. And so I can't, you know, to that own self be true. I sit there and I tell other ladies, you know, opportunity knocks, open the door and take it. And so the opportunity was there because at the time you had to come off the national board to be able to run for national president. And I'm sitting on the national board with the opportunity. I mean, I didn't even know. It wasn't like this was on my vision board to be national president. It was just an opportunity that I was there looking at. And it's people were asking me, so you're going to run for president? Like, I just got Southeast vice president. I don't, what? Because they knew what the rules were. And I was happy enough being Southeast regional vice president, but still no ambitions of being president. But I kept getting asked. And then I realized the opportunity was sitting there. And I realized I had the qualifications. So like I said, to that own self be true. All I can do is try. Representation matters. You know, that's why I ran for vice president. I got sick and tired of not having issues that affected me in my career and other people that I know, not being heard, not being represented. You know, so I ran. What else? How else was that part of the question?
Well, you know, basically that was you answered both. With that, you did answer both. The question one was what got you into it to begin with, and then, you know, why are you going to continue? And you answered both of those.
Great.
What are the advantages and disadvantages of giving students full voting rights in the ACF?
Well, you know, I don't really see a disadvantage to it. So the advantages would be we have a apathetic voting population. We don't get 100%. We don't even get 50%. It's on average 35% of people who are eligible to vote. And so to say the argument that, you know, you got to pay to play, well, then that's the case. You wouldn't have our retired professionals. They don't pay full price. You know, they pay, you know, a minimum. You know, I think it's $50, $60.
50, 60
then you're
bucks.
Saying that they, So then you would say that they too then don't get a full vote. If the concept of what was said last term, last year was you got to pay to play. If I pay $250, then I get a full vote. But you're only paying $85, you shouldn't get a full vote. Okay, so then talk to your retired members. I think that because we have such an influx of young members you know, the majority of our new members are our young members, that I think that it would definitely input what we do for ACF. That's our future. That's our now. You know, ACF average age is like 58. You know, so what are we going to do? Just die and take it to the ground with us? I mean, we're 94 years old, and at this rate, you won't make it to 100. You know, so we have to do something. And you can't just keep doing the same thing and expect a different result, right? We all know what that is. And so if we don't take advantage and incorporate our youth, our students, into what the operations of ACF is all about and how it's going to benefit them, because we got to make it benefit them, then I think them having a voice is key.
Wouldn't it be that if we're trying to get the students, wouldn't it be possible or feasible to give them a full vote? Wouldn't that also give them the advantage of joining the membership at $85? Because I remember when I was a student, and I'm going to sound like my father, but I was going to school. I was going to school Saturday and Sundays in culinary school, and I was working three jobs during the week to get by. And I paid for my $85 student registration at that point. If I would have known back then that I only got a quarter of a vote, then I don't think I would have gone. I wouldn't have joined.
Yeah, and see, so when I joined, juniors, the students still had their own meeting, their own organization kind of thing, right? So we kind of liked it that way. At least I know I did in my apprenticeship area, you know, because it was very intimidating to see all these other chefs, older chefs with these foreign accents, you know, talking to you. And most times they were not talking nicely to you, you know? So we didn't want to associate with that. We had our own meetings, and the junior president was the one who was the liaison basically between the organization of the professional chefs and the junior chefs. And so, you know, who wanted to be president of the juniors? So like, that means you have to go deal with the big boys. Like, and we didn't want that. And so it's easier now. I think it's a lot more of an open door policy now because you really don't have a junior chapter and a senior chapter or professional chapter. And it's really mostly all the same. It's all encompassing. So it bridging that gap between what's happening and the decisions that are making now that affect them anyway. Why would you not want to give them a voice and a vote?
Well, part of the situation last year in Vegas when this was brought up, one of the questions or one of the arguments from that side was the teachers will have too much influence over the vote. Like, you know, you have to vote for Joe XYZ. What do you say to them on that front?
If that's the case, you'd have a bigger influx of student voting and people voting now. I think that's crazy. I think you underestimate and you do a disservice to the mentality of the people who are students at this point in time, that the teacher has that much influence that they'll just vote because the teacher told them to vote. Like I said, we have teachers who don't even know about ACF or what ACF does. And I've talked to too many students, like I said, who are wearing those patches and have no clue. So if the teacher was more immersed and immersed in ACF activities, then they would know. And I would think they'd be able to just go to the website and you know, part of their class, you know, go to the website and talk about and do a research paper on the board or do research paper on this or whatever. And let's talk about it, let's discuss. I would love to, you know, reach out to more people. I would love to have that conversation with the teachers. I don't think teachers that I know are geared and reared that way to be sitting there and talking about don't vote for her, vote for him, don't vote for him, vote for her. I don't see that happening. I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's some people who might do that. People do that now. Our members do that now. Are you kidding me? They support and endorse people all the time. So for them to say it's okay for one but not for the other is crazy.
Do you believe there should be term limits for national positions, specifically the chairman of the board?
Well, you know, yes, I believe there should be term limits. And yes, I put in a bylaw change for that. It should come up for a vote. Thank God. The chair, you can't really limit the chair because the chair really is the immediate past president. And so if the person who's the president, you know, we had that issue where you know, the one resigned and stepped down, then the chair stayed the chair for a long time, as is now. So it's not so much that, you know, that is the only position that's not voted on is the immediate past president chair of the board, you know? So there's not a vote. So the term limit for that really depends upon who the president is. So that's where, but I do believe in term limits. I wanted it at 10, and we just had this discussion when the committee brought forth all the bylaw changes coming forward. And then the board went back to, well, we should be 12 at least, you know, because, you know, you do 4 years, 4 years, 4 years. And then, you know, then you know, you want to sit there, you want to be vice president, then you want to be a secretary, then maybe you want to go and wait your turn. But see, that plays into that good old board mentality. You just, you know, slide around to the next chair around the table. You know, if you're going to be president, then you need to be strategic about it. If you want to run, then you run. You don't wait for your buddy to get through, then you got next. That makes no sense. I think 10 years is good enough. But they came back, well, that splits the term. Well, okay, so fine. It splits the term. But for you to sit on the board because you want to do 4 years as a secretary, 4 years as a VP, and then if you don't want to run against your buddy, then you can sit 4 more years, and then assuming that you win, you know, assuming that you win, I think it's crazy. I do believe in term limits. I do believe sitting on this board for 16 years, 20 years is too long. It's just, it needs to change, totally needs to change. So, yes.
You know, some of the questions we asked and some of the stuff that the challenger kind of answered, I want to kind of bring some of that stuff out too, because what I love about us doing this as the podcast, and this is kind of like my own, call it a little selfish, but for me, as seeing the election the way it is, the only person that's not being challenged right now is the secretary, Jeff Bacon. Everyone else seems like to have that challenger. And as an AACF member for 27 years, this is the first time I've seen something so heated. So, and I'm not so heated, but I've never seen this many positions being challenged at one point in time.
And, you know, and what's different is that usually for the second term, that officer runs unopposed.
Right. Correct. And this is, yeah, and this is everybody on this is actually being run, is being opposed or challenged. Mm-hmm, so for me, this is kind of bringing out a lot of stuff that is somebody who wants to listen to both sides of the coin. So that's where my selfishness comes through. My question is some of the things that were pointed out to us, I want to kind of air out things. The challenger said something about us losing an $1 million contract with the Army. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so I don't know when we started collaborating with the Army so much. So, I mean, we just had the 47th Culinary Exposition with them at Fort Lee. So, you know, talking with the people in the commands in charge up there and with ACF, it wasn't that we lost that much money like that. It was because the Army has not, like, just one base. It's the Army all overall based everywhere. And so different commands dictate different things for each base. And so if the commander changes and they're not into culinary, they're into this, this, and that, then their focus and their base will then change. So a lot of that happened. A lot of people also who got moved and transitioned to overseas didn't realize, and our presence wasn't as great at the time either, online, that they could take their membership with them and they can continue and do continue air courses online. So that communication wasn't there or wasn't as great as it should have been. But it wasn't because we just dropped the ball or ticked somebody off. When you change commands, I mean, I went last year for the first time and met the brigadier general who's over that base. But there's somebody new there this year and met that admiral. But there's a new chief there, met that chief. But their focus is on culinary. And so if the person from, say, the Coast Guard isn't on culinary, they're focused on this and that, but they know they have to have somebody there to represent, then okay, fine. So if that commanding officer is not into culinary, that's the problem. And that's what the problem was. And so just getting everybody back on board and helping them to realize what ACF can do for them, whether they're here or overseas has been instrumental. So no, we did not lose no $12 million on that. That's not it. It wasn't because we didn't dot I's and cross T's. That's not it either.
And then some of the other questions or some of the things that were brought up from the challenger was this transparency within the national office and theft at the national level. You want to talk about that as well?
Sure, I'd love to. So you know, we get audited every year. We pay for one auditing company, accounting company to come in and look at our books. And then we have our internal audit of elected officials, appointed officials. And never did any one of those entities, auditors, find anything about theft. The only thing that they did find was that there's equipment missing from Team USA from the last team that went. And so I would then suggest the question should be asked to that team manager, the associate assistant team manager, and the business manager who happens to be, the person who said that there was theft at the office. That's the only thing that was found as far as anything missing. Nothing else has been missing from the ACF office.
And you said how many audits were done? Two audits were done.
We do.
Is that normal?
Every year. One. That's the norm. Yeah. Okay. One we pay, and one we have our internal audit committee who does. Same thing. And the results are presented to the board of governors every year at convention.
How did the ACF do a CMPC beta test that has no direct result and someone gain a certification in just 3 days of an 8-day exam?
So this is very interesting. The CMPC and the CMC testing has been an ongoing evaluation, re-evaluation for years, and I do mean years. And so, yes, CMPCs had input on the test. They wrote up whatever they wrote up and submitted it to the commission. The commission came back and they did what they did. AMCO had whatever they had to say about it, whatever. And then they ran the test. Well, there are some beta tests that are not, because it's a beta or a practice run or it's, you know, something that's not to be perfected yet, but they have to run the test to see is what they were doing. And I get that. I was part of a beta test for CCA. You know, we helped develop the test as chefs. And over the course of the year, and by the year's end, we were able to take the test for free. And if we passed it, then we got a CCA. If we didn't, we just didn't. And so it's the same concept. It's not anything new that ACF has done. It's the way the commission has been set up and the way the commission has run. So if the person takes the test and they pass the test, would you say that the person then needs to retake the test when they figure out what's wrong, what's right with the test, become a CMPC, or would you give it to them because they did everything they needed to do and was actually there?
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving. Your partner in organization and efficiency.
Do you, was it done in secret? Because that's some of the stuff that's been thrown around as well.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't believe it was advertised. The board knew that there were changes coming up down the pike. We weren't aware of exactly how much was going to happen. I became aware of a master pastry chef exam, I want to say in December, and I determined I wanted to be there because as a pastry chef, I wanted to see a pastry chef exam. I've never seen a master chef exam, never had the opportunity to go. And so I wanted to see it. So that's why I was there. You know, the history of the master pastry chef exam is, you know, it's got like a 95% fail rate. The last time it was given was 2015 by the young man who just took it and passed it, and another extremely well-known, great pastry chef, and they were both failed. Before that, the last time somebody passed it was 2003. And so
20 years.
And so so like, why? So if they were so concerned about the CMPC, why would they wait when you have a fail rate of that? You know, and arguably two of the best pastry people in America, you failed them both. So you weren't concerned about it then because there was no concern, there's no love for the pastry chef. I'm not sure I understand it. But if there's a problem with the test, I've been an adjunct. If I know 95% of my people are failing, then it's either the test, the teaching, or both. You know, you need to fix it. And so the challenge was to fix it. And I believe from talking with the commission and seeing their reports that the idea of both the test was to make it more of a stair step. So if one day you spend on doing Patashu, why do you need to do Patashu again if you have mastered Patashu on the CPC level, right? So if you've already been tested on Patashu, why do we need to spend a day testing it again on the master level? If you've already iced the cake on the CEPC level, why do we have to spend a day icing cakes on this level? Why can't we not be tested on something different? And so that's what they were looking at, adding different things that CEPC, CWPC had not been tested on, and expanding upon other things. So as you noticed that this year, the CEPC, one of the cakes has disappeared. You're only doing one cake, but now you're doing chocolates, bonbons, right? So that's a new thing right there too. But it leads into going into the stair steps. So now we take that and we up it and we put the chocolates in a piece or a sugar piece in there, whatever, whatever, to go with those bonbons, truffles, whatever, whatever. And we're pairing it with wine, champagnes, whatever. So it's a stair step that they were going for, and that would be on both levels.
Now, I'm going to
talk about MasterChefs.
Mm-hmm. So on the MasterChef and the CMPCs, and you may not have this information, so I'm going to ask the question anyways. How many CMCs are there currently?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the exact number. It's somewhere in the 60s.
Okay. And then how many CP?
Like 67-ish.
All right. How many CMPCs?
I think it's four. And one is not active. Well, three are active. So it's Baltimore, who is active. He's been in our ACF conventions the last 2-3 years. Joe Decker, who's up there as a teacher. Northmore, who I was told is not really working anymore in the industry. And there's somebody else in the Northeast whose name is escaping me. So I want to say there's four. Well, you know, 3.5, because if one's not working or they're retired, you know, somebody would say, oh, well, so-and-so's a master chef, but he's not working. He's retired. Well, okay. He's not doing anything. So do you count him? He's not like he's judging. He's not, you know, having this business anymore. So he's retired. He's out the business totally. So just like we have a lot of master chefs around who are out the business totally. They're aged, they're retired, and they're done.
How long is the test for the CMCs? If my memory serves me correct, it's been changed quite some time, right? Quite a bit.
It's changed to 2 4-day sessions, which still means the chef who's taking that test is going to be away really 7 days, because you're not going to show up the day before. You're going to show up at least 2 days before. And then you're probably going to be there day after to recuperate. You know, and so, but leading up to that, the thought was that there would be some weekend courses on hand, you know, hands-on classes that the CMC would be taking and doing with some other master chefs to hone in on whatever skills that they think they need to hone in on. You know, so it's not like it's just 2 weeks. You know, you take the test in January, then you take the second part in July or whatever. You know, so the chef has been giving up 2 weeks of vacation time plus whatever the weekends are, at least 2 or 3 in between, to get to that level, to be in the pipeline to get to the MasterChef test. And so the change was to get that level down, because a lot of people just can't take 2 weeks off, or they can't dedicate that time or that money to it. So how can we streamline that? Why do I have to fabricate the chicken again when I did that the certified chef de cuisine level? Why, you know, so just stair steps. Do that on this level, then we test you on this level. Well, what's relevant? Are we still aspecting or show flooding things? I mean, I don't know. Is that relevant, or should we be testing the master for that too? I mean, I used to show fraud back in my day, but who's doing that now?
Right.
So I think it's just a matter of what's relevant. What is more user-friendly, and why do I want to be a master chef? You know, is that what mastery is all about? And also, you know, in looking at it, I've had many comments about, well, that wasn't gold medal work, but this is not about gold medal. It's about competencies. So if you're saying that the work was a low silver, high bronze, even that fits in the competencies of the score. It's 75% or better to pass. You know, so a low silver, it's still in the 80s. High bronze is still in the upper 70s. 75 is passing. You know, so you don't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be gold medal. It has to be competent, 75 or better.
What does it mean for the ACF now that the American Master Chef's Order, AMCO, has displaced itself from the ACF certifications? And why is that?
Well, they haven't. They said, but they're back at the table. And it's an ongoing conversation. I know our task force that we developed has put out the action for a call, and waiting for them to agree to come to the call sometime next week, actually. There have been letters back and forth. We have somebody now who's a master chef, I guess Chef McGinnis, on the commission. It wasn't like a master chef was kicked off the commission. Their term expired in December. And so master chef decided they wanted to wait. And so it's a lot of ego, really, truly is on both sides. And the boys are playing with the boys. And, you know, I want to take my toys and go to another sandbox. And I get that to a point. But at the end of the day, ACF does own the test. AMCO has been used to running things and dictating a lot. But it's not their test, and the liability falls on ACF. And so you have master chefs who are dictating the test, but they're not taking off the tests and requirements as an evaluator that we as evaluators have to take, the anti-harassment, confidentiality. And so if there's anything that happens and there's an exam that goes awry, say somebody makes comments, does crazy stuff, and it has happened, ACF is liable, not AMCO. You know, so there are things that need to come to alignment that needs to be the same for everything. AMCO will be back. I don't believe that they want to walk away and not have their certification, because that's what that would mean. If they walk away, they have to be ACF members and they have to keep their certification if they want to be master chefs. So it expires. They're not going to renew it after all that. I don't think so.
How many members have you directly brought into and or sponsored on their application to the ACF?
No, that is such a crazy question, because I don't keep track of that. Who knows that? Who knows the paper application? That's an online thing. I don't. I tell people where to go. I give them, you know, websites and blah, blah, blah. But I'm not sitting there with a pencil and paper.
You don't have like a notch on your belt or on the, you know, somewhere.
No, it's in her toque. No. It's each notch in her toque. Yeah. Okay.
There you go. It's like any. It's only different. There you go.
Chef, how long have you been an ACF member?
So.
That you want to admit.
I'm blessed for my age. I'm good. Okay. So I joined as an apprentice in 1981. That's 42. There are basically about 2 years when I wasn't a member, because there wasn't a chapter where I lived. So I would say 40 years.
40 years. All right. So
I've seen some things. Trust.
Hey, look.
I've experienced some things.
I said it earlier. I don't want any trouble.
Wait, I got one more question though, before we go anywhere. So another thing that was stated by the challengers that we're in the red and that we sold our building, we're renting a building now. Can you elaborate on financials?
Yeah. So we went from having an office space of 10,000 square feet in St. Augustine, Florida, to selling it for a myriad of reasons, most of them financial. Because at the time with that administration and the ones before that, we were about $1 million in debt. Right, you had $1 million line of credit that was sitting there looming, and so at the time our building was in need of some, preventive maintenance, you know, air conditioning, roofing, paving, blah blah blah, and we're sitting already with $1 million owed, and so the time was right, real estate was right to sell the building and to secure something smaller, and so the look around came, and it happened to be a smaller building, 4,000 square feet in Jacksonville, which is where we are now. We took it, we made the money from the sale of our building in St. Augustine, which we own that one too, bought the building that we're in currently now in Jacksonville, bought it with the money, and then put money into the bank after we paid off that $1 million loan. So no, we are not in the red. No, we did not rent the building that we own and bought all right with cash. And yes, we paid off that $1 million debt from previous administrations. And we still have zero debt on that line of credit.
And then you also, we went from 4 days, if I'm not mistaken, at convention to down to 3, correct? And why did we do that?
Yeah, so, you know, one of those surveys, you know, listening to members that the convention is too long or it's too expensive, blah, blah, blah. And so we just listened to members who say it was too long. So we decided to try and see cutting it down a day, what that would do. And so we packed more things into those days. So we're just trying to see how the streamline would work. Is it a good viable option? Some members have gotten used to having this, this, and that. But then, you know, do we take away the free day? Because there used to be a free day in there. People can go out and explore the city, do whatever they want to do. And so now, you know, if you're going to the Academy dinner, then that's your Tuesday night. If you're staying for the gala, hopefully you are, that's the Wednesday night. Our opening reception now is on Sunday after the board of governors meeting. And so Monday night then is a free night that you can go out to the city and explore, have a great time if you're not going to the Academy dinner on the Tuesday. But all than that, you know, we just jammed up the days full of speakers and demonstrations, you know, and networking. So we just listened to the members and just cut it down a day and see what happens.
Excellent. Chef, that concludes the the Q&A.
You can take a deep breath now.
Yeah, you can breathe. I've been dabbing my forehead this whole time.
God, I'm sorry. There's been so much I could say to defend and deflate whatever, you know, like we don't have 34 employees, but we have 22. We've laid off, we've done things.
I'm going to give you 30 seconds to tell why people should vote for you. Go.
So you should vote for me because the direction that we are going in is positive. We are making money. We are making friends. We have sponsors, you know, and the inroads we're making with the diversity, inclusion, and equity is tremendous. People are paying attention. We have got partnerships and collaborations that were not there before. And to keep that going is a vote for me. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
And you have two members actually in the national office too.
Two members?
Yeah, you have Jackie and you have Dina. Those are two members for the ACF.
All right.
As far as chefs. Oh, okay. But you also forget Michelle. She's a chef as well.
Yep. We're coming up against the hard end here. So I want to thank you, Chef Kimberly Brock Brown, for being on the show. Jeffrey, as always, appreciate you. John, you're awesome. Thank you. And we are out.
Thank you.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.